We're doing in Yaakov. We're up to Chet Amud Bet in the standard editions, which is page Chaf Gimel Amdalv in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, we began this. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught, Kol Hashmanim Yafim Ledio V'Shem Zayit Min HaMuvchar. If we're going to make the dye, we discussed this at length earlier in the week, when they'd make the dye, so they had different mixtures. And if you want to make the dye, the best oil to mix into the dye is olive oil. Ibailu, legabel ole hashen. So the Gemara asks, what did Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi mean? Did he mean literally to mix it into the dye?
Wait, what are we mixing?
Olive oil. Okay. Or did he mean to take the coal, to take the coal that comes out when you light a flame and use that for the dye? Le'ashen, meaning if you would take, let's say, a glass cup and put it over a flame, so the bottom of the cup turns black. So that black smoke that comes out, you can collect it and then make that into dye. You know, they used to have chimney sweeps. Or they used to have many buildings were heated with coal. So then the fire from that coal would create more soot, and that soot can be used to make dye. So the Gemara is asking, which one did he mean, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Tashma detani Rav Shmuel bar Zutra, kol shmanim yafim nedio, v'shem zayit min hamuvchar, ben negabel ben nashen. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra taught, all oils work well in dye, but olive oil is the best, and it doesn't matter if you're going to use it to mix into the dye, or to produce smoke to make the dye, like we just described, the soot from the smoke. Either one, olive oil is the best. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra matni la hachi. He quoted the following. Kol ha'ashanim yafim nedio v'shem zayit min hamuvchar. He had a quote that the best smoke for producing dye is olive oil smoke. So that's talking about olive oil alone. Amar Ravuna kol ha'srafim yafim nedio. All sap are good for producing dye. V'sraf k'taf yafeh mikulam. But the sap from the tree that's called k'taf is the best. Rashi says sraf is guma. Okay, that's a French word. We have any Frenchmen here? What's guma?
Oh, guma?
Yeah.
It's like a chewing gum.
Yeah, okay, so guma is probably gum, and we assume he means gum Arabic. Right? Okay. Next, we were talking about lighting Hanukkah candles. Mai mevarech, what blessing does one make when he lights Hanukkah candles? Mevarech, he makes the following blessing. Asher kedashanu b'mitzotav v'tzivanu ladlik ner shel Chanukah. He who blessed is he who sanctified us and commanded us. I'm sorry, who sanctified us with his mitzvos and commanded us to light the lamp of Chanukah. Wait a second, God commanded us to light Hanukkah candles? Ve'chan tzivanu, where did God command us to light Hanukkah candles? Raviv yamar. Okay, so this is a good question, right? This is a question we should ask ourselves about many, many mitzvot we do. We wash our hands in the morning. We say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al netilat yadayim. God commanded us to wash hands in the morning? Doesn't say it in the Torah. Let's see, what else? Where else do we have? Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. Ladlik ner shel Shabbos. Okay, what else do we have? Likros ha'halel. There's no biblical mitzvah to read halel on Rosh Chodesh. What does that mean? So this question is really a global question. Raviv yamar milot asur. Raviv says, the Torah says, don't veer from what the high court teaches you to the left or the right. So if God tells you, don't veer from what they tell you, so that's where he told you. Listen to what they tell you. And they told you to light Hanukkah candles. Rav Nechemia amar, shalavicha v'yagetcha zekeinecha v'yomru lach. Rav Nechemia says, it says in the verse, ask your father, he will tell you. Ask your elders, and they will tell you. So you see, you're supposed to ask your elders, and they will tell you. Okay, so this leads us to a big question. The first answer, lo tasu, is a biblical prohibition, right? The Torah prohibits you from veering from what the high court teaches, right? That's a biblical commandment. Now, when I perform a rabbinic mitzvah, am I also fulfilling a biblical mitzvah? And if you'll say, yes, you are, so then I'll ask, well, we have differences between rabbinic and biblical mitzvah, right? On a biblical mitzvah, we say, safeka d'oraita lechumra. When in doubt, you have to be more stringent. On a rabbinic mitzvah, we say, safek d'rabanan lekula. When in doubt, you should be more lenient. If a person transgresses a biblical commandment, there are all kinds of biblical punishments. Could be the death penalty, it could be lashes. Obviously, there have to be witnesses. The person has to be warned just before he commits the crime, etc. On a rabbinic mitzvah, there are no such punishments. Why? If every rabbinic mitzvah is also a biblical one, because the Torah warns us, then a rabbinic mitzvah turns out to be even more severe than a biblical one. Yeah? Yes?
But couldn't, theoretically, a court of equal status to a court that issued a decree, reverse that decree, or change, alter?
Let's say yes, and then what?
And therefore, you could possibly be performing a mitzvah that could not necessarily be coming from the Torah.
Okay, very nice. So that's another big question we'd have to ask. The rabbis instituted holidays during the period of the Second Temple, Megillat Ta'anit. And then the rabbis annulled those holidays when the Second Temple was destroyed. Do they annul it retroactively?
Which holidays?
We discussed it earlier. We have a whole book called Megillat Ta'anit, the holidays that they implemented. Yes?
I believe they did not.
They did not what? They didn't do it retroactively.
Right.
Right.
At that time, they were performing a mitzvah. Afterwards,
granted, right. The Rebbe of Gur has a whole piece explaining, proving that. So, okay, it gets a little bit more complex. The rabbis made an institution: you may not eat meat or other food that was baked or cooked by someone not Jewish. Right? We know that. Okay, so let's say I had food at home before they made that institution. Now what? Can I eat it or not? Now they made the institution. The rabbi said you may not drink wine that was in the possession of someone not Jewish when you don't know what happened to it. So the Torah prohibits it if it was libated for an idol. The rabbis came and prohibited a circumstance where you don't even know what happened, so long as someone else had access to it. So now what? I have wine at home, and now they made this institution. So retroactively, I've been drinking non-kosher all the time? No, they made the institution now. Does the institution now also prohibit me from my stockpile of wines I wasn't careful with? So we have a lot of things to discuss if we were spending a Shavuos night going into this whole subject of how do rabbinic institutions work? The first subject which we brought up, which really lends itself, that discussion lends itself to this Gemara, is every rabbinic institution biblical? That happens to be a big machlokes between the Rambam and other Rishonim. Nachmanides, among others, argues with the Rambam on this point. The Shev Shmaisa, there was a big rabbi in Europe who lived in the freezing cold of Russia and would spend much of his day in bed because it was so cold. He would be learning in bed. He was a super genius. He compiled the work called Ktsos HaChoshen. He would get out from under the covers and start writing until the ink would freeze. Then he'd go back under the covers and learn until the ink would thaw out. Then he'd come back over the covers to continue writing. That was the genius of the Ktsos HaChoshen. When he got married, in the Sheva Brachos, he gave 7 speeches on each of the Sheva Brachos. Those speeches were compiled into one of the most amazing works of Lamdus, of deep thought in Talmud, called the Shev Shmaisa. 7 speeches that he gave, each one at a different Sheva Bracha, right? 7 days of Sheva Brachos. And those speeches are masterpieces. So his first speech was on this topic, on this argument. Is every rabbinic mitzvah also a biblical one? How are we to understand this passage in Talmud, where the Talmud says, when I make a blessing on a rabbinic mitzvah, and I say the words, God commanded us, I'm saying, He commanded us to listen to the rabbis who gave me this mitzvah. So does that make every rabbinic mitzvah biblical as well? That's the whole speech is on, no, not the whole speech, but a part of the speech is on this machlokas. So here we've learned one source with regards to that discussion. The Gemara over here tells us this. The Rambam rules this. And the relevance is when we make a blessing. You're going to make a blessing tomorrow morning. You're going to make a blessing when you wash your hands for bread. What should be your intent? So the Rambam rules that we go with this Gemara, and your intent is, He commanded us to listen to the rabbis who told us to, al netilat yadayim, to wash our hands. Told us to read Hallel. So that's how the Rambam goes.
What's the other opinion? On which do we possibly
go? It seems we go with the Rambam on that point, as far as Kavanah. Yes?
Since Hashem exists outside of time, you would know all the decrees that the rabbis would make forth after giving the Torah. So by giving that decree, wouldn't all of the decrees of all of the mitzvot and everything that we have to follow, isn't that also in some level from the light, because Hashem would know anyway?
I want to throw a monkey wrench into the discussion. I'll begin with an example, and then we'll make it a little bit more complicated, okay? Let's say this was a third grade class, and I walked out of the room, and I said, Nachum, if Benny tells you what to do, don't disobey him. Okay? Whatever Benny says, I don't want you to do any different than what he says. Okay? I leave the room, and Benny says, stand on your head. And you're sitting there contemplating, do I know how to stand on my head or not? And, okay, you start making attempts, and then I walk back into the room. And I say, Nachum, did you listen to what I said? Now, you can argue and say, if I didn't do different than what he said, then in essence, I listened to what you said. But let's say I would have worded it differently. Did you go against what I said? So then you would have only gone against what I've said if you've done different than what he said, right? Let's take a case where he didn't say anything. Then if I'd asked you, did you go against what I said? The answer is no. If I'd asked you, did you listen to what I said? The answer is also no, right? What am I getting at? The Torah says, don't veer to the right or left from what they say. So if you've veered, you've transgressed. But if you've stayed in line, have you really fulfilled the commandment? Or do we say that positive is the lack of a negative? By fulfilling what they've said, you haven't transgressed the commandment, don't veer. But is their commandment do what they said, or is the commandment is don't leave what they've said? So you can say, well, don't leave, but intrinsically means also do. But wait, there's a beginning of the pasuk. This is where it gets a little bit more complicated. The Torah began by saying, Al pi ha-Torah shel yoruha, based on the Torah they teach you, I want you to act. And then the Torah says, do not veer from what they said, left or right. Now, if you would have asked me, I would have said, the reason you have to listen to the rabbis is because of the first part of the pasuk. The pasuk says, based on what they teach you, you should behave. That's what I would have thought is the commandment to listen to the rabbis. That's not what the Talmud said. The Talmud said the commandment is don't veer from what they've said, left or right. Okay, you understand the question? Maybe you already understand the direction. Yes?
But isn't almost everything that they've said something that contains an action or a set of actions?
Could be.
Therefore, In other words, let's say cheese and dairy, or not cheese, chicken and dairy, for example. Or open dairy. Let's say like that was a rabbinical decree, and then let's say that by not veering to the left or the right, you're still keeping kosher. You're separating chicken and dairy, and those are actions that you're doing, and you're not veering to the left and the right. But you haven't really done anything different.
Okay. But if they tell me to light Hanukkah candles, that's proactive. And we're saying that proactive commandment, when it says, I'm doing what God commanded me, my proactive doing of what God commanded me stems from God saying, don't veer from what they've said. Why? Why didn't the Talmud just say, listen to what they say? You know, there is a pasuk that says that. Food for thought.
If is the blessing in the morning, it will sound like this. Aruch atah Hashem, Elokim, Elokim, Asher Kitchan, to listen to our beloved rabbi, regard the wishing in the hand.
Right.
That will be the entire one.
That's how the Rambam learns. Sure. Yeah,
so they make it short because maybe everybody understands it that way. So.
Oh, that's another question. Why they made it short? Should we take 2 minutes to address that?
Wait, did they cut it in half?
No. He's saying they could have said, make a different blessing on rabbinic things.
Yeah.
And they could have spelled out this intention, but they didn't. So we have to notice a few concepts. Number one, the rabbis are prohibited from making a rabbinic institution and leading us to think it's biblical. They can't do that. They can't make believe what they've said is in the Torah. Because then they could run into the transgression of adding to the Torah. They have no right to say something if the Torah didn't say it. The flip side of it is that the rabbis don't have to come and tell you about everything. Hey, this is rabbinic. Because very often people don't take rabbinic institutions as seriously. People might say, oh, it's rabbinic. So what would be if we'd have a different blessing? What would be if every time you did a rabbinic mitzvah, you'd say, blessed are you, Hashem, who gave us holiness through the mitzvahs and commanded us to listen to the rabbis who told us to light Hanukkah candles. And what happens when you're pretty upset at the rabbi? That can happen, right?
I'm not listening to him.
Oh, yeah. For sure, in the first generations where they made the institution. So there was definitely an interest not to stress this point that it's rabbinic. But this is a broader topic, meaning you're raising a very interesting point. This is just starters on the topic.
Because now, this generation seems like they lose the understanding, so they are like the aliens today for that starting point that was a different generation, different problem.
I hear.